RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Monica Smith is an Australian activist and the founder of Reignite Democracy Australia, a group that's been known for its opposition to COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccine mandates. She gained attention for her role in advocating for civil liberties and challenging government restrictions related to the pandemic. Monica began a case against the Victoria Police on the 23rd of July for her arrests while working as a journalist during COVID-19 restrictions and severe lockdowns in Victoria, Australia. She argued that her arrest was unjust and challenged the police's actions as being an infringement on her civil liberties. The case has finished now and a judgment will be handed down on the 6th of September. The case attracted significant media attention, as you can imagine, and became a focal point in discussions about the balance between public health measures and individual rights. At one stage, Monica was held in solitary confinement for 22 days. She's written a book called Cell 22 about her experience. We'll let you know how you can get a hold of a copy of that at the end of our chat, because Monica Smith joins us now. Hi, Monica. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's very exciting.
I've always wondered what it would be like to be held in solitary confinement. What was that like?
To be honest, it sounds worse than it is. Only because I have many weaknesses, but one of my strengths is that I have mental strength, and I've worked on myself a lot in the past. So being alone for 22 days with my thoughts was not so overwhelming, because I'd sort of done the work to be okay with that. And actually, on the funny side of it, I was working so hard outside that actually prison was kind of a break. I really was able to get a different perspective in prison. However, in saying all of that, being strip searched, being stripped of your liberties, and being stuck in a room for 22 days, I didn't get to go outside once. I got no exposure to sunlight or wind or anything for 22 days. And I think that was a bit extreme.
And was that done to you for any particular reason? Were they trying to break you?
Well, that will be an argument for the next court case. But they said I didn't want to take a PCR test, okay? And I was supposed to be in solitary confinement for 14 days. And then halfway through those 14 days, that 14 days turned into, apparently the new procedure was 19 days. And then for those extra 3 days waiting for my appeal, they just put me into another solitary confinement cell. So I don't think they followed procedure at all.
What was the attitude? We'll get to all the other detail, but I'm just curious. What was the attitude towards you by the individuals who were, you know, interfacing with you during this time?
I write about this quite a lot in my book because, to be honest, I have quite a bit of respect for the job that they do. They have to handle a lot of different characters and, quite honestly, some really crazy people. And I got to hear all of that, and the way that they dealt with them was quite incredible. But with me, there seemed to be a sense that they knew who I was already. Of course, they talk in the lunchrooms, don't they? And they knew I wasn't like the others. And, you know, I was pretty much a model prisoner. You know, I was quiet. I did what I had to do, and that was it. And there were some women in there that were like, I saw you getting arrested, and, I don't want to take the vaccine and stuff like that. So there was some camaraderie like that too.
I've seen a couple of things you've said on camera. One was they picked on the wrong chick. I'm pretty sure you said that.
Yeah,
okay, so there's that. But also you were arrested 3 times, I think, in one day back then. And I've seen other clips too, you know, Avi trying to get some words out of the police superintendent. He wasn't saying anything. And you said, yeah, the other thing you said was that you did used to respect the police. But I wonder what you think of them now, and how do you explain their mentality? Because it seemed to be they were all kind of on board with this. So what are your thoughts about that?
You've got to look at the individuals in comparison to the organisation. As an organisation, I don't respect them at all. They're obviously politically biased because they affirm causes And if you affirm a cause, you automatically are showcasing that you are against a cause, because you can't be for something if you're not also against something. So taking a knee at Black Lives Matter or parading in LGBT parades, it just shows they have political bias and it automatically shows they have negative political bias as well. And that's what I argued in my case, is that the organisation itself has been taken over by political agendas, and that just shouldn't be the case. And it's been happening for decades and it's only becoming obvious now. Now, the individuals, for sure, that I know, many police who took much honour in making sure they never went to a protest, they never gave a COVID fine. Did they stand up and you know, make a point? No, but they did in their own way ensure that they weren't a part of that problem. You know, so, and I've met many police officers during the last 4 years who have been absolutely amazing towards me. So I'm just guessing here, okay, but I actually think 80% of police officers are police officers for the right reasons, and about 20% of them are just thugs and they need to be cleared out.
The ones who dealt with you, were they in the thug category?
It depends on which ones you're talking about. So when I did my case recently, I was able to cross-examine about 7 or 8 police officers. Now, one of them was extremely senior, acting superintendent, and the other two were lesser senior, but quite senior. Those three were trained on how to speak in cross-examinations, and they were quite evasive in many ways. And to be honest, quite cold. Like, you could feel the coldness of their heart and soul, especially when answering particular questions. Right. The constables, however, underneath them, I spoke to at least 3 or 4 constables. Some of them had only been police officers for 2 years. And I had quite a bit of sympathy for them, because they were set up to fail by their superiors. And look, I know that following orders is not an excuse. I totally understand that. But in the moment, when you see your superior giving an order to arrest someone, you assume that your superior has done their groundwork before doing that. So I don't actually blame the constables. I blame the people who wrote the operation documents and who gave the orders to arrest, for example. And I can tell you right now that on the stand, there was moments of compassion, empathy, and humanity with at least 3 out of the 4 constables that I had on the stand. And that, to me, is the difference between the thugs and the good police.
It's interesting what you say. So the police in command have kind of been filtered to be a certain personality type. Would it be okay to say that?
Either they've become that personality type, or they only have that position because they are that personality
right.
type. I'm not really sure. You know, there's also, if you're close to retirement, you don't want to rattle any cages before you are close to retirement, do you? So I think a lot of them were just saving their bacon too.
All right. So you decided to defend yourself, to represent yourself in court. That would be a lot for someone to consider doing first up, but then actually take on. Why did you decide to do it that way?
I'm a difficult client from a lawyer's perspective because I'm very passionate. And I said to my lawyer that it wasn't about the money for me. It was about making a public spectacle and making a point. Yeah. And he said, well, I can't represent you anymore because the civil courts is all about the money. And I'm like, well, I don't care. I'm a citizen. This is the only chance I have. I can't lobby parliament. They don't listen to me. So I don't care if I'm not doing it for the reasons I'm supposed to. I want to do it anyway. And lawyers, unfortunately, they have an oath to the court before their clients. And that's just a fact. So if they come up with a situation where they think they might be wasting the court's time on some sort of crusade, then they actually have to drop you as a client. Now, I don't like that, but I understand it. So from now on, I have to represent myself because my motivations are not the regular type. And also, I've got to be honest, Paul, it's when you are okay at speaking for yourself, having someone else speak for you is actually very painful. And they go off into these corner rooms and your lawyers and their lawyers have conversations about your life and you're right there. And it's excruciating. I've had it before and I don't want to feel like an outsider in my own life again.
And what was the experience like? I mean, you've talked a bit about it with the, you know, the way that, you know, you cross-examine some of the police constables, et cetera. But what was the, as you were doing it, how were you feeling?
Well, it was a lot harder than I had anticipated, and mostly just the cross-examinations of the police because they're so clever in how they answer questions. And to have to think about the rebuttal and then write notes for your closing submissions and then it's just a lot. And I believe in God, and I was lucky to have someone that I knew like magically turn up and help me. Halfway through the case. And he ended up being my McKenzie friend, which is a legal term for someone who's not a lawyer, but who can sit there and help you. And I think I still would have had a similar, maybe similar result without him. However, I might be in the hospital for like a mental breakdown right now. That first day when I started cross-examining, I actually got physically sick. We had to delay for 4 days. And I think that was a mixture of actually getting the flu. But secondly, my immune system would have been so down that it was susceptible. But getting sick was also part of God's plan because I had met that McKenzie friend that day and we had all week, even though I was sick, to prepare and plan. So I got to be honest, I don't know how well I would have fared without him. But can I also say, I know I don't have the judgment yet, but win or lose, you can still set a precedent if you lose as well, by the way. Right. But the judge was extremely fair. She was an expert in self-represented litigants, so she understood what she was patient and things like that. And the defense, in fact, who had two full-time barristers every day and two full-time solicitors and then more administrators at home working at the office working for them, they actually really peeved off the judge a few times with things that they tried to say and do. And she seemed to be very courteous towards me. And she knew that I was doing my best under the circumstances. And I was always respectful. And all the people who came to watch me were respectful. So in response to that, I think I got a very, very fair trial. And it has actually encouraged my faith in the judicial system, at least for now.
Speaking of faith, because I just picked up on that, what you said about, you know, your belief in God. And I've heard a lot of people say that there was a very testing time, the time we're talking about, you know, last 3 years. It made a lot of people focus on spiritual matters, let's say. So is this more than just an individual defending herself? Is there something bigger that, well, obviously there is. There's something bigger that's pushing you and motivating you. Am I right?
It's really pretty obvious to me that I wouldn't be able to do actually anything that I did without God. So I'm actually a Latin Mass Catholic, which is quite a traditional style of Catholicism, old school. We're actually not really in line with Rome, which, you know, it doesn't seem like such a bad thing at the moment. Anyway, and it's not just about the church, it's like the community. I was brought up in it, so I have all that support from my community. And it's really strange, about 95% of all Latin Mass goers are awake. And I just feel
that's interesting.
Yeah, yep. all over the world, any country I go to, someone recognizes me because they're in line with that way of thinking. And, you know, all of the churches I know of, they weren't wearing masks, they were opening up when they weren't supposed to, and all of that sort of stuff. We had weddings where we weren't supposed to and stuff like that. And so it actually made our community stronger instead of the opposite, which I've heard with a lot of other people. But I want to say as well that, not everyone has a lifestyle to do the things that I do. I don't have children, not really by choice, but it just hasn't happened. I don't have children. I'm not married. I'm on my own. I had a lot of savings from working previously. And I have an extremely supportive family. Like all my siblings are like me. I've got 4 siblings and 15 nieces and nephews and 4 great nieces and nephews. And none of us are vaccinated. Not that that has to be a thing, but I'm just saying we've always been alternative and we've always been on the same page with everything like this. So when you think about all the pain and suffering that other people went through when they got disconnected from their friends and family, I had none of that suffering at all, not even like one tiny bit of it. So my suffering was going against the government and, you know, working hard and things like that. So we all have different roles to play. And I'm just playing my role and I feel like it's where I'm meant to be. And when God tells me to stop and to do something else, that's what I'm going to do.
When you reflect over that time, you know, the last, it's kind of in the rear view, the rear view mirror for many now, it's sort of getting smaller and smaller, though who knows when this could strike again. What are some of your reflections on it. I know you singled out a few moments where you were refused service. I know that one. I was too, because I was a refused Nick as well. You know, and when, I mean, I think you were describing something that happened to you at Macca's, and it was like listening to some kind of weird, crazy sort of story. You know, it only a few years later, it's hard to believe that that was happening. What are your thoughts looking back?
Looking back, it does feel like some sort of a horror film that you're not in anymore. But when you're in it, you don't really see it like that either. And the communities that were created are, to be honest, out of this world, you know. Right. And I know that people aren't as active now because there isn't as much of a crisis, and that is totally normal. And I think it's actually good that people are regrouping and they're finding their energy and they're relaxing while they can, because if stuff hits the fan again, no matter what it's for, all of those people that have woken up since and were woken up already, that we'll all be out and about ready to fight it. So I think those times needed to happen to get all of us, you know, politically motivated and not necessarily politically, but just aware of what's going on. And I think our communities have grown probably 4 times since then, but we don't know because there's no crisis in our faces.
Do you think it was some kind of test?
Oh, look, we'd just be guessing if we were going to start doing that. But it could just be as simple as it could have just been about money.
Yeah.
You know.
But forcing people to go either way, and I get why people chose to do a certain thing. Their whole material existence was put at risk. I get that. But, you know, sometimes in life, big testing moments come along. Which way do you go? You know.
You know what I would say? I reckon they did it 10 years too early. Someone at the top there is getting old and he wanted to see the see how his plan would work out. I don't know who, but like, let's just say, if they had done COVID 10 years later, let's just say it was all orchestrated, I reckon they would have had so much more success because we would all be 10 years older and there'd be 10 more years of brainwashing in high schools and schools, which is really bad, of course. I think they pushed the button too early and they totally stuffed up because they didn't expect people to be as awake as they were. And now we're never going back to sleep. So I actually think they regret it a lot.
What happens if you lose, Monica?
Oh, this case?
Yeah. I mean, how much are you up for? It's going to cost money, isn't it?
It's so funny because it's literally like my life is ruined or it's amazing. It's like the pendulum is huge. So if I lose, I could have to pay $300,000 in legal costs, maybe even more. And if I win, then I could get a payout of $200,000. Who knows? It wasn't about the money, but hey, I deserve it. And I do some good things with it. But there's not really a middle ground. It's like all or nothing or less than nothing.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm the right person for the job because if, you know, worst case scenario, I can just claim bankruptcy or whatever. You know, like I've got no dependents. I've got, and that's what I think bothers them about me as well, is that I don't have that risk factor that most people have. I don't even own a car. I've got nothing to lose, you know, and that's a beautiful place to be in. And I think God made me in that position for a reason.
Okay, so you don't have to wait too much longer. We're almost at the beginning of September, a couple more days. On the timing of this chat with you. So about a week to wait. And and it's not very long. So how will you, do you have to go back into court to hear, well, you must do, have to go back to court to hear the verdict, do you?
Yeah, I actually opted to go back to court, even though it means I have to fly back from Queensland to Victoria, because after everything I've been through, I thought, geez, imagine getting your verdict on Zoom. Like it would feel so unceremonious, you know? So I actually opted for court. And so there'll be an event, people will come to watch, and then we'll go celebrate afterwards, regardless of win or lose, because I'm still celebrating the finish line, regardless. And you'll definitely know about it if you're watching my social medias, of course.
It's been really interesting chatting to you, and I think our audience will be rooting for you. You know, I just know it. I know.
Thanks.
I am, because I went through my own thing too. We all have our stories, right? Didn't quite get to being arrested three times in a day and put in solitary confinement, but it was awkward. It was very awkward. So,
can I talk to New Zealanders for a moment?
Please.
if you are like me and you have low risk and you have you're persistent and you have support and you got falsely arrested or excessively arrested, like with force, or if your house was raided and there was no charge, for example, anything like that, reach out to me or do your own research because you could do what I've done. And if I win, that's good. This is going to be a better message than, and I do think I will. Think about doing that because we've spent 4 years campaigning and things all over New Zealand, all over Australia, trying to lobby to Parliament. And to be honest, it sometimes feels like no one's hearing us and we don't seem to get much traction. But if you go to court and you set precedents, well, hey, maybe that's a better use of our energy. Maybe we can actually change the system by going to the courts instead of lobbying these politicians, because let's be honest, they're pretty evil and hard to get to. So anyway, think about that in your own lives. Just take one little thing that happened to you and represent yourself if you're the right kind of personality and you could make a huge difference.
And how can Kiwis buy your book, Monica, before you go?
So you can buy a physical copy, but because we don't use Amazon and we print and ship it all ourselves, the shipping's probably going to be the price of the book, which is $30 for the book and it's probably $20 for shipping. But for $10, you can get the audiobook. So that's a really great option.
Nice to be able to chat with you. Fascinating story. We'll be hanging off, you know, the result on the 6th of September. And
yes.
And maybe when the dust settled, we can chat again about the aftermath of that. But thank you for coming on
RCR
and sharing your story. And yeah, you sound like the wrong chick. said, right?
Yeah, whoops. Even my brother growing up with me, he said, sometimes I felt like hitting you, but I realized that if I hit you, I would be the one getting in trouble. Same with the police. They should have just left you alone.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All the best for that.
Thanks,
and we'll
Paul.
we'll be interested in the verdict. Thank you so much. See ya. Bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.